This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, I'm Rick Deluski, and this is this week's Poetry and Short Stories audio podcast. And I'm going to continue in the theme. April is National Poetry Month, and so I'm going to continue with poems. And the poems today are written by people from Ohio or with deep Ohio roots, except for the first one I'm going to read, and that's a poem by Ada Limon, who I've said before is, she's not my favorite poet, she's number two, but I like her a lot, and she is the Poet Laureate of the United States right now, and is actively involved in National Poetry Month, and I'm going to read what I believe is my favorite poet of hers, but she has so many good ones. This one is called Lover. Easy light storms in through the window, soft edges of the world smudged by mist, a squirrel's nest rigged high in the maple. I've got a bone to pick with whomever is in charge. All year I've said, you know what's funny? And then nothing. Nothing is funny, which makes me laugh in an oblivion is coming sort of way. A friend writes the word lover in a note, and I'm strangely excited for the word lover to come back. Come back, lover, come back to the five and dime. I could squeal with the idea of blissful release, oh, lover. What a word, what a world, this gray waiting. In me, a need to nestle deep into the safekeeping of sky. I am too used to nostalgia now, a sweet escape of age. Centuries of pleasure before us and after us, still right now a softness, like the worn fabric of a nightshirt. And what I do not say is, I trust the world to come back. Return like a word, long forgotten and maligned for all its gross tenderness, a joke told in a sunbeam, the world walking in, ready to be ravaged, open for business. And that again was Lover by Ada Limon. And now I'm going to read a couple of poems from Ambrose Bierce. Ambrose Bierce was born June 24th, 1842 in Horse Cave Creek, Ohio, which is in Meigs County, Ohio. He's about that Horse Cave Creek is about 32 miles from Parkersburg, West Virginia. So it's in very southeastern Ohio. He was a journalist, soldier, writer of fiction, historical fiction, poetry, and he was considered one of the great writers. His book, The Devil's Dictionary, was named one of the 100 greatest masterpieces of American literature by the American Revolution Bicentennial Administration, and an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge has just been described as one of the most famous and frequently anthologized stories in American literature. And he also died kind of mysteriously. We're not sure of the exact date. He was in Mexico, had written a letter to a friend dated December 26, 1913, and he, quote unquote, vanished without a trace. One of the most famous disappearances in American literary history. And the first poem I'm going to read by Ambrose Bierce is called The Day of Wrath, Dies Irae, D-I-E-S-I-R-A-E, that's medieval Latin. Day of Satan's painful duty, earth shall vanish, hot and sooty. So says virtue, so says beauty. Ah, what terror shall be shaping when the judge, the truth's undraping, cats from every bag escaping. Now the trumpet's invocation calls the dead to condemnation. All receive an invitation. Death and nature now are quaking. In the late lamented waking, in their breezy shrouds are shaking. Lo, the ledger's leaves are stirring. And the clerk to them referring makes it awkward for the erring. When the judge appears in session, we shall attend confession, loudly preaching non-suppression. How shall I then make romances mitigating circumstances? Even the just must take their chances. King whose majesty amazes, save thou him who sings thy praises. Fountain quench my private blazes. Pray remember, sacred Savior, mind the playful hand that gave your death blow. Pardon such behavior. Seeking me, fatigue assailed thee. Calvary's outlook naught availed thee. Now 'twere cruel if I failed thee. Righteous judge and learned brother, pray the prejudices smother. Ere we meet to try each other, sighs of guilt my conscience gushes, and my face vermilion flushes. Spare me for my pretty blushes. Thief and harlot, when repenting, thou forgavest complimenting me with sign of like relenting. If too bold is my petition, I'll receive with due submission my dismissal from perdition. When thy sheep thou hast selected, from the goats may I respected stand amongst them undetected. When offenders are indicted and the trial flames ignited, elsewhere I'll attend if cited. Ashen-hearted, prone and prayerful, when of death I see the air full, lest I perish to be careful. On that day of lamentation, when to enjoy the conflagration, men come forth, oh, be not cruel, spare me, Lord, make me thy fuel. And that again was the day of wrath / dies irae, and dies irae again is medieval Latin, which is something that's sung in a mass for the dead. And the next poem I will read by Ambrose Bierce is called The New Decalogue. And Decalogue is a reference to the Ten Commandments. Have but one God, thy knees were sore if bent in prayer to three or four. Adore no images save those the coinage of thy country shows. Take not the name in vain, direct thy swearing unto some effect. Thy hand from Sunday work be held, work not at all unless compelled. Honor thy parents and perchance their wills thy fortunes may advance. Kill not, death liberates thy foe from persecution's constant woe. Kiss not thy neighbor's wife, of course there's no objection to divorce. To steal were folly, for 'tis plain, in cheating there is greater gain. Bear not false witness, shake your head, and say that you have heard it said, who stays to covet near will catch an opportunity to snatch. And that, again, is the New Decalogue. And the last poem I will read by Ambrose Burnside was a famous Union general in the Civil War, and Bierce was in the Civil War. But anyway, it's Ambrose Bierce, and this is called The Statesman. How blessed the land that counts among her sons so many good and wise to execute great feats of tongue when troubles rise. Behold them mounting every stump by speech or liberty to guard. Observe their courage, see them jump and come down hard. Walk up, each cries aloud, and learn from me what you must do to turn aside the thundercloud, the earthquake too. Beware the wiles of yonder quack who stuffs the ears of all that pass. I alone can show that black is white as grass. They shout through all the day and break the silence of the night as well. They'd make, I wish they'd go and make of heaven a hell. A advocates free silver, B free trade, and C free banking laws. Free board, clothes, lodging would from me win warm applause. Low D lifts up his voice. You see the single tax on land would fall all alike, more evenly, no tax at all. With paper money, bellows E, we'll all be rich as lords. No doubt, and richest of the lot will be the chap without. As many cures as idle wits who know not what the ailment is. Meanwhile, the patient foams and spits like a gin fizz. Alas, poor body politic, your fate is all too clearly read. To be not altogether quick, nor very dead. You take your exercise in squirms, your rest in fainting fits between. 'Tis plain that your disorder's worms fat and lean. Worm capital, worm labor dwell within your maw and muscle scope. Their quarrels make your life a hell, your death a hope. God send you find not such an end to ills, however sharp and huge. God send your convalesce. God send your vermifuge. And I don't know what vermifuge means, but that is The Statesman by Ambrose Bierce. And now I'm going to read some poems written by Clara Ann Thompson. She was a poet, teacher, and civil rights advocate, born January 22nd, 1869 in Rosmoyne, Ohio, the middle-born daughter of formerly enslaved parents, John Henry and Clara Jane Thompson. And Clara Jane Thompson was educated in the arts and prepared for a teaching career. Again, she was born January 22nd, 1869. She died in 1949 at the age of 80. And again, she lived in Rosmoyne, Ohio, which is actually still according to the census, it's a designated place. And it's got a population of 1,788. It's near between Blue Ash and Deer Park. And again, she is one of Ohio's great poets. And the first poem I'm going to read by Clara Ann Thompson is called Memorial Day. Go, for 'tis Memorial Morning. Go with hearts of peace and love. Deck the graves of fallen soldiers. Go, your gratitude to prove. Gather flowers and take them thither, emblem of a nation's tears. Grateful hearts cannot forget them in the rush of passing years. Strew the flowers above their couches. Let thy hearts affection blend with the dewy buds and blossoms that in fragrant showers descend. Strew the flowers above the heroes slain for loving friends in thee. Canst thou find a better offering for those sons of liberty? In a tone, though low and gentle, yet as ardent as a cry, why must precious lives be given that our country may be free? Is there not a nobler pathway to the throne of liberty? Can we choose no nobler watchword than the ringing battle cry, harbinger of strife and bloodshed? Must we sin that sin may die? Long ago to far Judea came the blessed Prince of Peace. Shall we ever heed his teaching that these wars and feuds may cease? And that again was Memorial Day. And the next poem I will read by Clara Ann Thompson is called Hope. The saddest day will have an eve, the darkest night a morn. Think not when clouds are thick and dark, thy way is too forlorn. For every cloud that e'er did rise to shade thy life's bright way, and every restless night of pain and every weary day, will bring thee gifts thou vault more because they cost so dear. The soul that faints not in the storm emerges bright and clear. And that again was Hope. And the next poem I will read by Clara Ann Thompson is Church Bells. I closed my book to listen. The story was losing its charms as the chime of distant church bells came stealing o'er gardens and farms. The bells are chiming a story that ne'er grows old, the story of Christ our shepherd and the sweet peace found in his fold. The story of all he suffered that we might have a home, and now the bells were calling the weary ones to come. The bells were calling, calling, blast, tender, pleading tone. Tender, pleading tone. O weary ones, they sweetly chimed, O weary ones, come home. The birds flew past the window with twitter and flutter and song, their hearts overflowing with music, glad hearts that knew no wrong. But the far-off bells were chiming of a price paid long ago, that we through faith may be sinless and pure as the falling snow. Come thou, O weary pilgrim, with burden grown too great, the Savior now is waiting, O lay them at his feet. The bells were calling, calling, blessed gentle pleading tone, O weary ones, O weary ones, O weary ones, come home. Have sin thy hands been staining until they're pure no more? Hath thorns thy feet been piercing until they're bleeding sore? Come thou to Christ thy Savior, his hand is stretched to thee. Take it, 'twill guide thee safe through life and through eternity. Sweetly the bells are calling, O sinner, heed the tone. O wicked ones, O wandering ones, O weary ones, come home. Thou canst not be too wretched to heed the gentle call. Thou canst be too wicked, his blood was shed for all. Though scoffers by the wayside scorn those who heed the tone, the bells chime clear and sweetly, thrice blessed are they, come home. The bells are calling, calling, tired sinner, will thou come? O wretched ones, O weeping ones, O weary ones, come home. List ye, the tones are changing. Hark, 'tis thy Savior's voice. Yes, 'tis thy Savior calling, and wilt thou make thy choice? Why dost thou vainly struggle to bear thy load alone when such a friend is waiting, when such a friend says, come? Thy Savior's waiting, pleading, O weary, wilt thou come? O weary ones, O burdened ones, O weary ones, come home. And that again was Church Bells, written by Clara Ann Thompson, who was a great African-American poet born back in 1869 to parents who were formerly slaves, John Henry and Clara Jane. And she lived in Ross Moines, Ohio, died in 1949. And the next poet, Ohio poet, I will read from is, her name is Helen Steiner Rice. She was born May 19, 1900, died April 23, 1981, at the age of 80. She was born in Lorain, Ohio, which is on Lake Erie, east of Cleveland. And she was an inspirational and Christian poet, and she was also a successful businesswoman and lecturer and campaigned for women's rights and improved working conditions. But her most satisfying outlet, according to what I read, was writing verse for the Gibson Greeting Card Company. And some of her poetry was read on the Lawrence Welk Show. If you're close to my age, I won't tell you what it is, but it's kind of old. You won't remember the Lawrence Welk Show. If you're young, you won't. And in 1929, she married Franklin Dryden Rice. She was born Helen Steiner. And he was a bank VP in Dayton, but the stock market crashed in October 1929, and he fell into depression and committed suicide in 1932. So she lived the last almost 50 years of her life without her husband, and she was a very, very successful woman in so many ways, and a great poet. And the first poem I'm going to read by Helen Steiner is called A Mother's Love. A mother's love is something that no one can explain. It is made of deep devotion and of sacrifice and pain. It is endless and unselfish and enduring come what may, for nothing can destroy it or take that love away. It is patient and forgiving when all others are forsaking, and it never fails or falters even though the heart is breaking. It believes beyond believing when the world around condemns, and it glows with all the beauty of the rarest, brightest gems. It is far beyond defining, it defies all explanation, and it still remains a secret, like the mysteries of creation. A many splendored miracle man cannot understand, and another wondrous evidence of God's tender, guiding hand. And that again was written by, it's called A Mother's Love by Helen Steiner Rice. And the next poem I will read by Helen is called Never Borrow Sorrow from Tomorrow. Deal only with the present. Never step into tomorrow. For God asks us just to trust him and to never borrow sorrow. For the future is not ours to know, and it may never be. So let us live and give our best and give it lavishly. For to meet tomorrow's troubles before they are even ours is to anticipate the Savior and to doubt his all-wise powers. So let us be content to solve our problems one by one, asking nothing of tomorrow except thy will be done. And that again was Never Borrow Sorrow from Tomorrow, which is as poetic a title as you'll find, written by Helen Steiner Rice. And the last poem I will read from Helen Steiner Rice is called Magic of Love. Love is like magic, and it always will be. For love still remains life's sweet mystery. Love works in ways that are wondrous and strange, and there's nothing in life that love cannot change. Love can transform the most commonplace into beauty and splendor and sweetness and grace. Love is unselfish, understanding, and kind, for it sees with its heart and not with its mind. Love gives and forgives. There is nothing too much for love to heal with its magic touch. Love is the language that every heart speaks, for love is the one thing that every heart seeks. And that again is The Magic of Love by Helen Steiner Rice. And the next few poems I read were written by Mary Oliver, who is one of the great poets of the 20th and 21st century. She was born September 10th, 1935 in Maple Heights, Ohio, which is also up in northern Ohio, east of Cleveland. She died January 17th, 2019 at the age of 83 in Hobie Sound, Florida. I have read her poems several times on this podcast. She's a Pulitzer Prize winner. She's won so many awards. Just a great, great poet, and a lot of her poetry is about nature. And the first one I will read is about nature. It's called The Swan. Did you two see it drifting all night on the Black River? Did you see it in the morning? Rising into the silvery air, an armful of white blossoms, a perfect commotion of silken linen as it leaned into the bondage of its wings, a snowbank, a bank of lilies, biting the air with its black beak. Did you hear it flooding and whistling? A shrill, dark music, like the rain pelting the trees, like a waterfall, knifing down the black ledges. And did you see it, finally just under the clouds, a white cross streaming across the sky, its feet, like black leaves, its wings like the stretching light of the river? And did you feel it in your heart, how it pertained to everything? And have you two finally figured out what beauty is for? And have you changed your life? And that again was The Swan by Mary Oliver. And the next poem I am going to read by Mary is called When Death Comes. When death comes like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut, when death comes like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between his shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering what is it going to be like? that cottage of darkness. And therefore I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And I look upon time as no more than an idea. And I consider eternity as another possibility. And I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular. In each name, a comfortable music in the mouth, tending as all music does towards silence. In each body, a lion of courage and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened and or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. I like that last line. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. Last two lines. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. And the third and last poem I will read by Mary Oliver is called The Sun. Have you ever seen anything in your life more wonderful than the way the sun, every evening, relaxed and easy, floats toward the horizon and into the clouds or the hills or the rumpled sea and is gone, and how it slides again out of the blackness every morning on the other side of the world, like a red flower, streaming upward on its heavenly oils, say on a morning in early summer, at its perfect imperial distance? And have you ever felt for anything such wild love? Do you think there's anywhere in any language a word billowing enough for the pleasure that fills you as the sun reaches out, as it warms you, as you stand there empty-handed? Or have you too turned from this world? Or have you too gone crazy for power, for things? And that again was The Sun by the great Mary Oliver. And the next poems I will read are by Abby Wheeler, who was born and raised by the Ohio River in New Richmond, Ohio, and she now lives in Cincinnati, and she is a staff and community member at Women Writing for a Change, which is a nonprofit organization I've mentioned a few times that offers a lot of things, including writing classes, primarily for women, but there is an all-gender class, which is what I'm in, and there are all kinds of openings for different people to do their writing and reading at Women Writing for a Change. And the first poem I'm going to read by Abby Wheeler is Gold on Gold. The best thing I can imagine, which also happens to exist, is a goldfinch perching on the stem of a sunflower. Gold on gold, the stuff of fairy tales, currency of the gods. Occasionally I'm tempted, like those early conquistadors, backs broken by the weight of bottomless treasure chests, to be lured by siren calls of fantastic rainbow feathers in distant damp forests, seductive jungle screeches, glistening wings on steamy mountaintops, teeming with colors I've never seen, worlds that must surely outshine those fields of corn and tobacco. But then in the morning, I brush my teeth and look out the window at sparkling wings. And that again was Gold on Gold. And next poem I'm going to read by Abby Wheeler is called One Day Begins the Greening. It's in the roots. And the title of the book I'm reading, written by Abby Wheeler, collection of her poetry, is called In the Roots. It's in the way after a long winter in which the bleak and barren seem to have no end, let alone a beginning. One day begins the greening. There on the tips of the trees and fluttering a rabbit's nose above the ground, a suggestion of renewal, you might think, but no, persistence. Because then comes another, and there is all of life again, all of color, of warmth, all growing, all blossoming, all love, all light. And is it a miracle? Does the heady scent of petrichor have you believing all is made new? This is the truth. When consumed by darkness, your path disappears before you. Just then the earth churns its important work beneath your feet, feeding the fount of spring's first flower, the one who waits until the ground is soft enough to push through tenderly at first, a rabbit's nibble, and lift its purple head, bobbing, nodding you forward. And that again is One Day Begins the Greening. It's In the Roots by Abby Wheeler. And the next poem, two poems I'm going to read are from a book called What I Can Carry by Lori Elizabeth Lambert. And Lori has two books of poetry that she has published. She is not from Ohio, but has lived in Ohio for 35 years or so and considers herself an Ohioan at this point. And the first poem I'm going to read by Lori is called My Advice. To check for a fever, don't feel the forehead. Instead, kiss your child's neck. Let your lips linger till you're sure. It's hot. It's not hot. Your lips will tell you. Here is why. The neck is a cozy, sheltered corner rich in circulation. It never misrepresents, as does the brow, exposed, sweaty with effort, or buffeted by breezes. And your lips are so very sensitive to touch and to temperature, more perceptive than your tired palm. Here is another why. How sweet, how intimate, how immeasurably tender to express your concern, your curiosity, and your caring with a gentle, unhurried, inquiring kiss. And if you're lucky like me, one day when your child, now much taller and looking less than well, sits down and asks you to check his neck, you will find your grateful lips lingering on a soft, tender, bristly spot. And that, again, is My Advice by Lori Lambert. And the next poem I'm going to read is called Ardor. It started months ago with books. Pictures of ancient, beautiful trees, alive and bent, contorted with age, or alive and enormous, a whole world sheltered by the branches of one tree. Detailed drawings of the veins of leaves, explaining the way leaves breathe. Diagrams and equations showing the layers of bark, the movement of water and carbon dioxide and oxygen. Trees become more significant and noticeable, parts of the landscape. In my walks through the woods, I began to stop and look up, following the trunk through the branches up to the sky, and I saw the reaching, the strength, the grace. I read more books about the spirituality of the beings that we call trees, here for eons, millions of years longer than anything remotely resembling a mammal. Trees breathe this planet to life, and in me grew like a seed opening a need, a desire, a curiosity, a voice. A book told me how to befriend a tree, stand near, send a message of respect, ask permission, and then approach, touch, wait. I visited a tree that I admired, followed the instructions from the book, and my reverence for this tree grew, but this tree did not respond to me. I did not give up. I did not push. I stopped thinking about the trees so much and started to just be among them in a new way. On an autumn day, I strayed from my usual walk and went out to the woods on a ridgeline at the northernmost point of my land. I stopped at the leaning tree, so named because it hangs out over the edge of the ridge, looking like it wants to take flight in spite of its enormity. I stood for a while near the leaning tree, spoke my intention to lay my hands on its skin of bark, and then I did so, trying not to put too much weight there. Perhaps it was the strange tilting posture. After a moment, I felt an invitation. I leaned forward and lay entirely upon the tree, my head turned sideways, resting on a very accommodating bump so that my ear and cheek were clear on the bark's rough surface, just my temple resting on that bump, and then the whole of the rest of me embracing, hoping that another 130 pounds was not too much for the leaning tree. My breathing changed. Air seemed to travel farther within me to an opening space, a place that had not breathed before. And that'll do it for Poetry and Short Stories this week. This is Rick Dulewski. Thanks for listening.